Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to the largest segment of society, to those who were formerly comatose but have now come to realize that the world's, and I mean every, political, religious, military, economic, and media institution is corrupt, that they have all become counterproductive, and they are not worth your allegiance, nor can they be fixed. Our phone number, if you would like to review this sorry state of affairs and participate in this conversation and talk about the hope that still exists, is 877-300-7645. When the Obaminator gave his opening salvo to Muslims at the birthplace of the Muslim Brotherhood, at the initiation of his presidency, and announced a reboot in relations with Muslims, telling Muslims that their religion was great and that this was their time and that they would find no interference as they sought to achieve the rise of Islamic influence from the United States. He ignited the Islamic Reformation, something that I have been warning people who have spoken in favor of such a thing, have been warning people who speak of the myth of moderate Islam or who advance the myth of radical Muslims or radical Islam, that such a thing would be catastrophic to the world. Because if Islam were to return to its roots, which it has, that Islam would become ever more terroristic. There would be more rapes, more abuse of women, more acts of pedophilia. The slave trade would raise its ugly head. Kidnapping, especially for ransom, dominate the landscape, and there, of course, would be war, savagery in war. And that's exactly what we have seen, and we have seen it influence country after country. It was amongst the most stupid things anyone representing a major country has ever done. And we have no one to blame but ourselves. Morons in this nation, the United States, elected him to a second term. Shame on you for being so stupid. Seriously, shame on you. You know, you elected a man who has now declared war on the Islamic State, won't even refer to them as the Islamic State, and has the gall to say the Islamic State isn't Islamic. And yet, you'll follow him off to war. Rally around the flag. What on earth is wrong with you? Wake up. Well, today we read that Yemen's Prime Minister submitted his resignation. The tide of Islamic war has claimed yet another secular leader. And while Yemen's Prime Minister is a Muslim, he is an example of the secular dictators that kept Islamic terrorism at least under control in places like Libya and in places like Iraq, in places like Syria, until the United States and the Obamination encouraged Muslims to rise up and claim this time. Well, he submitted his resignation to President Abd Rabu Mansour Hadi on Sunday amid ever-escalating chaos. Shiite Muslims are advancing on military installations and government offices throughout the capital. In Yemen, the United States constantly sent its drones to kill Sunni Muslims because America was under the illusion that Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula was an actual terrorist group. It wasn't. It was a means to a website. At absolute peak, they may have had 200 people associated with them. I think they carried out two or three minor terrorist skirmishes in Yemen. Never carried out one in the United States. We're pen pals with a few good Muslims. But other than that, we're a waste of time, a waste of breath. Their only claim to fame was the website called Inspire, which was a jihadi website telling Muslims how to go off and build pressure pot bombs and how to maim people with things that you can find in your mom's kitchen. But yet we sent drones over them. We killed fundamentalist Muslims and civilians alike, all of which, lashing out at shadows, all we did is ignore the bigger problem, which is the rift between Sunni and Shiite Muslims that is encapsulating the world of Islam. It's the fight that exists with the Islamic State. That's why it is absolutely moronic for the United States to engage on either side in this conflict. To fight against the Islamic State is to fight on behalf of Shia Islam and therefore Iran and its nuclear program and ambition to control not only the Muslim world but to destroy Israel and the United States. To fight on behalf of the Islamic State is to repudiate everything America did in Iraq, to join forces with Saudi Arabia, which is the principal financier of Sunni Islamic terrorism worldwide, and to continue to arm and abet the vast majority of Muslims who will ultimately prevail in this battle as they position themselves to conquer the rest of the world. There is no way to win. There's only losing and losing. And that is what has now happened in Yemen. The move by Mohammed Salim Basindwa added to the confusion in Sana'a, which is the capital of Yemen, where the Houthi Shia rebels were due to sign a deal brokered by the United Nations Special Envoy, intended to end the fighting and to pave the way for a new government within a matter of weeks. But Muslims don't honor agreements. The Quran's ninth surah tells us that. It is too bad that the United States leadership and the UN leadership hasn't bothered to read the Quran, or they wouldn't be played for fools. The residents of the capital said that the Shia Houthis had taken over multiple government sites, including the prime minister's residence and offices, army command centers, as well as the state's television compound, after security forces had withdrawn. The fighting in Sana'a threatens the entire process of the UN-backed transition to democracy. That's almost funny. When are we going to stop using the term democracy in association with Islam? When is the world going to realize that Islam is about submit and obey? The Quran speaks of submitting and obeying and repeats that theme over and over again. Muslims are told that they have no choice, that Allah has determined their religion, that Allah has determined their politics, that Allah has determined their leadership, that Allah has determined their fate, and they ought not have any say in any of those things. That is wholly incompatible with democracy. Moreover, for a democracy to prevail, the people have to be educated. They have to be able to exercise good judgment. That is a prerequisite, one which does not exist in any Islamic country. Speaking of bad behavior, Boko Haram has never been held accountable for the kidnapping of hundreds of little girls and their subsequent rape and murder. They sold those little girls into slavery, sexual slavery, and the world did nothing. Oh, I shouldn't say that. The First Lady Obamanation held up a little cue card, bring back our girls, posted it on a social network site, we did something right. Now, we'll send 3,000 Americans to be a quarantine curtain for Ebola? We'll send American bombers to bring down the very Islamic State that America brought up and nurtured, equipped and armed. But will we lift a finger besides a Crayola to help the little girls savaged by Boko Haram? Will now the National Organization for Women that wanted the chief of the NFL to resign because he wasn't harsh enough against someone who was harsh against his fiancée, now wife, lift up their voice to besmirch Islam? To speak out against Boko Haram? Do we have backbone anywhere in this country? Well, Boko Haram militants attacked a rural market in northeast Nigeria, killing dozens of people. The gunmen shot at traders and at customers as they raided the busy market. People just simply trying to buy and sell food. The number of casualties is not clear, but as many as 30 were killed, and twice that many were seriously wounded. Boko Haram has taken control of a great swath of towns and villages in Nigeria in recent weeks. They have gone unchecked. They are growing faster now than the Islamic State. In fact, their leader has said that he has aligned Boko Haram with the Islamic State and is part of its caliphate. Authorities have failed in every attempt to control Boko Haram, and my sense is that the Nigerian military has made things worse, not better, because they continue to torture everyone that they suspect of bad behavior, but it's really the Nigerian police and military that are the most egregious in bad behavior, themselves perpetrating rapes for their own amusement. And so there are no good sides in Nigeria. Only bad outcomes. Evil prevailing everywhere. And in this swath of evil, Boko Haram continues to enact absolute pandemonium. People there are now without hope. This is an interesting insight. It appears that I am not the only one who dislikes, you know, you can say despises the CIA. I recognize that the CIA is more likely to be engaged in behavior that is contrary to the best interests of America than they are to be engaged in behavior that is beneficial to America. I recognize that the CIA has no operatives actually engaged in the fundamentalist Islamic world. None. That the CIA relies entirely on bribed individuals who most often take the bribe and continue to work on behalf of the fundamentalist Islamic organization that they have been hired to spy on. David Headley, I think, is the greatest example of the CIA and FBI being played for fools. Twice, David Headley's wives, both of which divorced him because he was so physically abusive to them, turned him in. They went to the FBI. The last wife went to James Clapper, National Security Chief of the United States, and while he was with the FBI, and said, you know, he is planning a terrorist attack in Mumbai, India. We're going to bomb multiple public buildings, Jewish facilities, and a large hotel. He's got models of them. He's planning it. And, of course, James Clapper not only didn't arrest him for doing so, didn't even notify the Indian government that the plot was afoot. And that was because David Headley was allegedly a double agent. He was compromised because twice he tried to import drugs, not for personal use. This was to sell them, cocaine, heroin. And the FBI cut him a deal and said, you know, if you'll squeal for us, if you'll spy on Pakistan terrorist organizations for us will not only pay you, will keep you from having to go to prison. Well, he just continued to work as a fundamentalist Islamic terrorist. Now, I know the David Headley story because Feinstein, in the immediate aftermath of Edward Snowden's gift to all the world, especially to Americans, where he revealed that America now viewed Americans as the enemy and was now spying on American citizens, Dianne Feinstein, who is chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, trying to justify the unjustifiable, was pushed to give an example of something that the NSA had done with all of its elaborate spying mechanism on Americans. And she named one person, David Headley. And as it turned out, David Headley was not caught trying to perpetrate a terrorist action on America. And knowledge that he was perpetrating a terrorist attack on India was found out and then ignored the old-fashioned way. There was wives squealing on him because he was so abusive to them, and the United States' James Clapper did nothing. The David Headley story is one that should cause all Americans to reject their senators, to reject their congressmen, to reject their president, to reject the CIA and FBI and NSA. But I'm not the only one who knows that these organizations are counterproductive. There is a great deal of concern about them also in the Islamic world. The United States has conducted, this is Dateline Baghdad, an escalating campaign of deadly airstrikes against the extremists of the Islamic State. There's actually no indication we've actually killed any member of the Islamic State, and they are not extremists, for more than a month now. But it appears to have done little to tamp down the conspiracy theories still circulating from the streets of Baghdad to the highest levels of the Iraqi government that the CIA is actually secretly behind the Islamic State that it is now attacking. Now, there is a reason for them to be concerned that the CIA is behind the Islamic State. And that is because the CIA has been involved in supplying weapons to the two main Islamic jihadi groups in Syria in their desire to topple Bashar al-Assad. And one of the two dominant Syrian jihadi groups is the Islamic State. And so the CIA has, in fact, been arming the Islamic State. So when the Iraqi government recognizes that the CIA is playing a duplicitous game, arming them on one side of the border, attacking them on the other side of the border, using them for their own interests, they're right. This is not paranoia. They're correct. And Americans should be angry, as are Iraqis. We know about who made Daesh, said Baha al-Arji, a deputy prime minister, using an Arabic shorthand for the Islamic State, at a demonstration called by the Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr to warn against the possible deployment of American ground troops. So here is the prime minister, deputy prime minister of Iraq. This is the government that the Obamanator has been praising as inclusive and unified. He, of course, is a Shia, as is every prominent government leader. And he's at a rally that was called by the second highest ranking religious leader in Iraq, al-Sadr. He is the fellow that controls the largest religious militia in Iraq, the Muhti Mujahideen. He was deadly to the Americans when he was deploying his Mujahideen while the Americans were high in country. And now this unified government that the Obamanator is praising in Iraq and now fighting on behalf of and arming is having a rally led by the most shrill anti-American voice in Iraq, warning against the deployment of American ground troops, saying ostensibly that America, CIA, created the Islamic State, which is partly true, and that if America engages to fight the Islamic State, the Mufti Mujahideen will attack and kill them. Mr. Sadr publicly blamed the CIA. So here is the second highest ranking individual in Iraq. He is second only to the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani, who is also an Iranian, in his influence. And in some ways, Sadr is more influential than is the Ayatollah al-Sistani. And that is because this al-Sistani, while he controls all of the politics of Iraq, Sadr controls the Shia militias of Iraq. And he himself blamed the American CIA for creating the Islamic State. This is not some conspiracy theory promoted by some person out of power or out of touch. This is the second most, perhaps the most, influential person in the post-Saddam Hussein Iraq, blaming the CIA for the Islamic State. And indeed, they are largely to blame for them. And there's two ways to look at it. I've just shared one of the two ways. One of the two ways is because the CIA played a major role and is continuing to play a major role in distributing American arms in Syria, and the largest recipient of those arms is the Islamic State. And they're giving them the arms because the CIA thinks that bringing down Saddam Assad is a good thing. It isn't. It's counterproductive. But there's nobody smart that works for the CIA. It's not a central intelligence agency. It's a complete lack of intelligence agency. Now, in Iraq, the CIA has also played a major role in creating the Islamic State. And Iraqis know it. They're fully aware that this is the case. And I've shared this with you time and time again in this program. And that is that the awakening program that was promoted by Petraeus as part of Bush's surge in Iraq, that was deployed during the midst of the first civil war in Iraq between Sunnis and Shias back in 2006, that awakening program is the basis of the Islamic State. There is no Islamic State without the weapons and the monies that were provided to Shia warlords on behalf of the United States through the auspices of the CIA. And so the CIA was the catalyst, was the means to get the weapons to the awakening program, which has become the Islamic State. So no matter if you're looking at what happened in Syria or you're looking at what happened in Iraq, the CIA is to blame for the Islamic State. And the Iraqi Shias know it. There's a lot of reasons that most people around the world don't like America. But high on that list is the duplicity and immorality of America's CIA. They have long been counterproductive to American security, making us ever more vulnerable, ever more hated because of what they have done. So Mr. Sadr publicly blamed the CIA for creating the Islamic State in a speech last week, and again in interviews, where he suggested that most of the few thousand people at the demonstration, including dozens of members of Parliament, also subscribed to the same conclusion. Boy. And we're trying to arm these same individuals, the Shiite leaders of Iraq, to battle the Islamic State and to trust America to come up with a battle plan against the Islamic State when they know, in fact, that our CIA is responsible for creating the Islamic State. What do you think the chances are that we're going to prevail under those circumstances? When an American journalist asked Mr. Araji to clarify if he blamed the CIA for the Islamic State, he repeated, "I'm one of the poor people here," he says, "so I don't think I want to answer that question." Then, speaking fluent English, he quickly stepped back towards the open door of the chauffeur-driven SUV that had been provided by the United States. "But we fear very much, thank you." In other words, he recognizes that all of the money and all of the weapons that are being supplied to Iraq now by the United States might be shortchanged. If he went on record with the U.S. media, not in Arabic, but in English, restating what Sadr had said as deputy prime minister, that the Islamic State is a product of the CIA. Arabic at the rally, you betcha, screaming it from the top of his lungs. The prevalence of the theory in the streets was underscored by deep suspicions of America's military returning to Iraq more than a decade after its invasion. They don't want us there. They didn't want us there. They don't want us there. We did not liberate Iraq. We did not find Iraqis receptive to us. They did not want Saddam Hussein overthrown. Iraq is in far worse shape without Saddam Hussein than it was with Saddam Hussein. We broke that country. We made a bad situation much worse. They don't want us there. The parliament has not yet confirmed nominees in this new government, and the crucial post of defense minister, because in part of the discord between Sunni and Shiites doesn't enable them to do so, even with a veil of inclusiveness. The demonstration on Saturday was the latest in a series of signals from Shiite leaders and their militias, especially those considered to be closest to Iran, which would be all of them, warning the United States not to put its soldiers back on the ground. Mr. Obama has pledged not to send combat troops, but he seems to have convinced very few Iraqis because he has sent thousands of them. And because we do have 5,000 CIA and State Department operatives already in Baghdad, on top of the thousands of troops that have been sent. And we have the Department of Defense, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, saying, yeah, I would recommend having American troops lead the assault against the Islamic State. Haidar al-Assadi, 40, agreed. He says the Islamic State is the clear creation of the United States, and the United States is trying to intervene again using the excuse of the Islamic State. He's right. The Islamic State did not exist, nor was there any presence of Islamic terrorist organizations, especially Al-Qaeda, in Iraq at the time of the American invasion. But after the American invasion, the Islamic State in Iraq emerged, specifically to counter the American invasion, to lash out not only at the Americans, but to the Shias America was empowering. And then when America wanted to exit Iraq after having broken the country and lost the war, it armed the Islamic State, the Sunni Awakening Program. And then on top of all that, when America decided that it would militarize the conflict in Syria and turn it into a proxy war, we armed the Islamic State to attack and destroy the Assad regime. He knows it. We created them, we armed them, and now we're trying to use our military to destroy our own menace. Shiite militias and their volunteers said we're already answering the call from the Shiite religious leaders to defend the new Shiite Iraq from the Sunni Islamic State. And with all of the ego and bravado of Islam, doing so without American help. This is how we do it, he said, adding that the same forces would keep the Americans out. The main reason Obama is saying that he will not invade again is because he knows of the Islamic resistance in Iraq to America. We don't want you. Oh, we'll take your bombs. We'll take your weapons. We'll take your money. But you stay the hell out because we hate you. That's the message. Caliph Ibrahim al-Baghdadi, the leader of the Islamic State, in typical Islamic fashion, arrogant as always, declared on Saturday that he defied the world to stop him. The conspiracies of the Jews, the Christians, the Shiites, and all tyrannical regimes in the Muslim countries have been powerless to make the Islamic State deviate from its path. The leader, Abu Bakr Ibrahim al-Baghdadi, declared in an audio recording released over the internet using derogatory terms. Oh, potty mouth! From early Islamic history to refer to Christians and Shiites, yeah. Time of ignorance. This brainchild of stupidity. And Islam does make a person stupid. I mean, it's a special kind of stupid in Islam. And I'll speak to that in a second. Islam is so stupid that what it had to create is the myth that prior to Islam, people were even stupider. And so, recognizing that Islam rose in a completely illiterate community. Muhammad was illiterate. All of his followers were illiterate. The civilized world had completely passed them by. You know, Persia was a great civilization, but that was due east. Greece and Rome were great civilizations, but they were due west. To the north, you had the areas where Greece and Rome and Persia had clashed, and civilizations grew there as well. But in the midst of the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, there was nothing. Nobody wanted it. Nobody engaged there. It was a complete vacuum of enlightenment, of intelligence, of civilization. And it was there that Islam grew. And it created a religion so stupid it would only fool a fool. But to make the foolish appear enlightened, the Muslims in their hadith came up with the myth that prior to the time that they conceived Islam, that the Arabs were even dumber than they are today, or that they were during the time of Muhammad. And so that's the derogatory statement. Now, the reason I say that to be a Muslim, you have to be dumber than a stone is, well, first of all, Allah is modeled after a stone. He is the big black stone. He was the largest stone in a pile of 360 stones in a building comprised of stacked stones in Mecca. And so to believe that God is a stone, you have to be dumber than that stone. But it gets much worse than that. The Quran is the worst book ever written. To believe that God inspired the Quran, you have to be a nincompoop, and your God has to be a fellow nincompoop. The Quran claims that it confirms the Torah, when in fact it contradicts every aspect of the Torah. And it claims that it confirms the Torah because that was its only claim to credibility. And yet it contradicts it in every possible way. It's the antithesis, and thereby destroys itself. If you are an intelligent individual and have read the Torah, and if you have read the Quran, and you compare them, and you recognize one says that it is the confirmation of the other, when it is, in fact, the antithesis of the former, you recognize that Islam is based upon a stupid miscalculation. Now, beyond that, of course, Muhammad was an absolute idiot. I mean, Muhammad's statements on creation, on science, on health, were absolutely moronic. I mean, the moon and the sun chase each other in a race each day. The sun goes to bed in a muddy spring at night. There's extraterrestrials that live around the spring where the sun goes nighty-night. The cure for diseases is camel urine. Fevers are a direct result not of disease but of the hellfire. And, of course, the ultimate whopper, which is that if you die killing others in Allah's cause, you go directly to Allah's brothel, and that heaven exists of a perpetual stream of never-ending virgins and rivers that flow with wine. If you believe that, you're an idiot. And so Muslims, to hide their stupidity, to slather upon those who aren't stupid, the very thing that afflicts them, which is true of most political and religious manifestations, the projection of one's own faults on others, they call Christians and Jews stupid, ignorant. It's laughable.